The following talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonabakar at Zen Mountain Monastery. Gokhan is a senior monastic and dharma holder in the Mountains and Rivers Order. He serves as director of operations at Zen Mountain Monastery and also helps run the National Buddhist Prison Sangha. This talk, like all of our talks, is given free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
This is the song of the grass-roofed hermitage, Master Shu Tao. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and take a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, it's covered by weeds. The person in this hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A great vehicle bodhisattva trusts without doubt. Most people can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window beneath the green pines. Jade palaces and vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats, trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk, innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations, are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. One of the songs Shugen Roshi was talking about yesterday. I did a week of hermitage practice last month and kind of rediscovered this teaching. In hermitage, we do a little bit of study, a lot of sitting. I'd been studying a Tibetan teaching, which was helpful and was like not quite feeding me. And I also had brought with me Hongzhi, a narrow, slim volume of his songs, of his teachings, his poems, his practice instructions. And at the back of that volume is this song of the grass roof hermitage. Shu Tao lived several hundred years before Hongzhi, and so this was included as an example, as an earlier example of this tradition in Chan, in Zen, of this form of teaching, expressing. The teacher singing to us, giving us instruction, guidance, encouragement, singing to themselves. And when I read this, this is what happened. it was like, oh, this is what I have been wanting. And also I felt like, oh, this is why I practice Zen. This is what I love. Simple and direct. Unadorned. Just this person sitting in a hut dedicated to realizing the way. And expressing his love for his life, love for the Dharma, for continuous practice. So this person just sitting, eating, resting in this simple hut that he says even jeweled palaces couldn't compare. What has he found? So I started to read this out loud to myself over and over, to read Hongzhe out loud to myself. I'd like to read this again. And I wanted to share this. And then as this talk has evolved, you'll see it's not sort of directly about this poem. Maybe it sits beside it. And I also, at the beginning of the week, I had this in me, and I heard Shugen Roshi and his encouragements, encouraging us to practice simplicity, humility, allowing ourselves to not know, and trust, to practice trusting that we can see deeply, see directly, see our own mind, our original mind. We're still practicing the same thing. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and take a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in. It's covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A great vehicle bodhisattva trusts without doubt. Most people can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window beneath the green pines, jade palaces and vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand it all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats, trying to entice guests? Just turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk, innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations, are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. The Tibetan teacher that I was reading says that ultimately the practice is letting go of clinging, not being distracted, and relaxing. Because our habitual clinging, our habitual distraction, and the ways that we are constricted, body and mind, the ways that we have put ourselves in opposition, are what obstruct us from seeing our original nature, from seeing our original mind. These are the obstructions that Shu Tao talks about at the end of his poem. He says, all of the teachings are to help us free ourselves from our obstructions, or I would say to free our obstructions. Another translation says that the teachings are just to loosen you from where you are stuck. So practice is letting go of clinging. What is clinging? We talk about clinging, attachment. What is the experience that they're pointing to, helping us to understand? How is it that you get stuck? Can you see how you get stuck? Shu Tao says he's not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. How is it to not be stuck? Hongzhi says the field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. You must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. Then you can reside in the clear circle of brightness. You must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. This is one of those lines that I feel like I kind of carry around in me. Humbling to see how over and over I get caught. Hongzhi says, this is just by tendencies that I have fabricated. They're just tendencies, just habits. I've made them into attachments. He says they're just apparent attachments. What's there when I get stuck? What is it to be attached to something? And so the teachings, the Buddhist teachings, this goes back to the very original teachings, talk about the way that when we make contact with something through our senses, that we have a response, a feeling, positive, negative, or neither, kind of neutral. It's pleasant, painful, or neither. And that kind of just happens like very in there, kind of immediately, unconsciously. And the teaching says, then it gets a little bit more. If it's pleasant, we want it. And there's some craving that begins. We want it to continue. If it's unpleasant, then we don't want it. There's some aversion. We want it to go away, or we want to get away from it. And we find a way to turn away. Whether grasping or aversion, what is it? It's just this moment of experience. The eyes see a form, and it's pleasant, and there's a moment of pleasure. Or it's unpleasant, and there's a moment of not pleasure. It doesn't feel good. But it's just a moment of experience. The teachings say we go from craving to grasping. Bill Waldron says, we not only crave pleasurable experiences, we attempt to appropriate them, to take them as our own. It is our misguided attempts to hold on to and identify with transient experiences, sensual experiences, emotional experiences, mental experiences. This is what inevitably leads to anxiety and frustration. These futile efforts ramify throughout our lives, building up energy and inertia to act and think and feel in certain ways, deepening the ruts of our habitual activities. building up energy to act and think and feel in certain ways, habitual ways. Habits, habits, habits. And so we study this grasping, habitual grasping. When you see that you're stuck, when you notice, how do you notice? Something happens in your body? Is there tightening? Maybe there are thoughts that go along with that. Something familiar? Oh, I've felt this before. This happens. Often it's some kind of reaction. To look there, what's happening? What's happening? Hongzhi says we must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away. So when we see that we're stuck, how do we work with it? He's giving us some options. I think kind of just talking about different ways of letting go. It's all letting go. How do we loosen a habit? It can be loosened because it was created, fabricated, because I created this habit, consciously or not. I can uncreate it. I can loosen its hold. It takes time. I think maybe this is what Hongzhi means by grind down. Sometimes it's like we just have to wear them away, allow them to wear away. We let go when it comes back. We let go when it comes back. We see a reaction. Oh, I don't want to react like that. I don't need to react like that. And we react like that again and again. How do we loosen? How do we let go? Why do I keep picking these things up again? But I can let them go. Loosen. Over time. I feel like I see myself how some things, most things, it's like growing tired of them. Growing weary of them. I don't need you anymore. I don't need to do this anymore. And that can take a while, even with like not so difficult things, to see how we like, or how I will like pick something up again, and it's like dry and brittle and like all dried out, but I'll pick it up again just to see, oh, get a little bit more from this. And I think it's important to see that we do get something. That's why we keep picking them up. We do get something. Is that what we actually want? And this aspect of continual, ceaseless practice, because our habits are deep, it's okay. It's okay. Things do change. It's okay that they keep coming back sometimes. The same Tibetan teacher says, looking for a remedy by rejecting something or pursuing any kind of accomplishment does not get beyond the cause and effect of cyclic existence. And so a reminder, letting go, purify, cure, grind down, or brush away, none of that means reject. It is not by rejecting, because then we're putting ourselves in conflict and just perpetuating conflict or samsaric habit. Our confused way of dealing with things. Practice is letting go of clinging. And he says practice is not being distracted. What is distraction? What is it when our mind is pulled away, when our attention becomes divided? Dada Roshi used to say to do what you're doing while you're doing it. Sometimes we say, do one thing at a time. Give it your full attention. Be wholehearted. Give it all of your awareness. How is it when you're doing one thing and thinking about another thing? How is it when you're divided? Or when you're trying to do two things at once. You're checking your email while you're in a Zoom meeting. Can you do two things at once? And why is this so important? There's such emphasis in Buddhism on not being distracted, gathering the mind, concentrating the mind. And I think, you know, a clear reason for that is because when we are distracted, we can't see. We can't see our mind when we're distracted, both in the sense of not, we can't see the workings of our mind. We can't see how we get stuck. We can't see what we're doing. And we can't see more deeply into our mind either. I was looking around a little bit to see if there's anything interesting in sort of a definition of distraction. And I found something, the Christian definition of distraction is anything that takes our attention away from God. And it said that there were apostles who were distracted by pain, distracted by doubt. That was interesting. It might sound familiar. Sort of feeling into like, what is that for me? Is not being distracted a form of devotion, reverence? This actually comes up for me. One of the monastic vows is a vow of simplicity. And often in sort of holding that and working with that, it is kind of around distraction, not making things complicated, not adding on. It's like, I want to be here. I want to be here. I don't want to spill my energies in distraction, in going over things over and over. I don't need to compose that email in my mind again. I don't want to do that. It takes great effort to turn the mind, to change our habits. And a lot of that is in not being distracted, settling the mind. It seems to be such a deep habit. Such a deep habit. I think because of that, it is familiar. And so it's comfortable. It may seem more natural. But is it? Is it true? And I was thinking with this poem, you know, so he's writing from his singing from his hermit hut. Did Chu Tao have to go off into a hut to overcome distraction? It helps coming to Sesshin. There's a lot less distraction. But when you walked in the door, distraction did not stay outside, right? In these lines, he says, places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. You know, as a monastic, there are places that I don't go anymore. Things I don't do anymore, or very rarely. And so there is that. And that's not, we can all do that. We all do that, I think. Right? We see this is not, I don't love this anymore. This doesn't feed me anymore. This is from an earlier me. But he's not just talking about being in the hut. To see where do we live? Where do you live in your mind? What do you turn to in your mind? What is the realm that you love? We could kind of think of it as like when you're in that worldly place, what is it that you turn to? And to look, is that really what you love? and relaxing. Practice is letting go of clinging, not being distracted, and relaxing. And so in this poem, we should certainly hear how relaxed Sher Tao is, calm and relaxed. He even takes a nap right at the beginning. That's my favorite line. 'Towards the end, he says, "Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Lifetimes of accumulated habits. Let it all go and relax completely." What is this relaxing? He is not lounging around in the hut. He has come to rest. Letting go and not being distracted is relaxing. A while back, I was talking to someone in interview and face-to-face teaching, and they were seeing how and expressing how they were tight in their zazen, and so I was suggesting, well, maybe to make it sort of part of your practice to loosen, to relax, I probably said be gentle. And they were like, wait a minute, this is serious. Right? Yes. Yes. And be gentle. Relax. It is serious. It is your life. It's sort of not Zen the reputation of Zen that we are here to relax. We come to Sishin to relax. It's rigorous. It needs to be rigorous. It takes great effort to turn the tides, to see clearly, to let go. But the difficulty is not the point. I think it's an easy misunderstanding. We bring some of us bring our habits. Oh, I can be tough. I can do this. The Tibetan master Machig Labdron says, be both strong and relaxed in meditation practice. So there's relaxing in letting go. I was reading something last week. A teacher talked about surrender. When I think of Sesshin, my experience is learning to give myself over. What is it to give yourself over to Sesshin? To practice. To practice that in Sesshin. Learn how it is, what it is to give ourselves over. If we're fighting, resisting, putting ourselves in opposition to the schedule, to our tiredness, we're creating suffering. We're making it hard. And Sishin may probably does help us to see all the ways that we put ourselves in opposition. How much we try to control, how much we criticize and kind of second guess ourselves, how much we doubt. That's what makes Sishin hard. And that's okay. That's sort of a necessary part to see where we're clinging. How do we relax these habits? And so to take this sort of invitation to see how is it when we give ourselves over in our zazen? How is it when we give ourselves over to our practice? To give ourselves over rather than to it, rather than bringing ourselves into it. When things are uncomfortable, what is it to give ourselves over, not to fight, not to oppose, to turn towards and allow ourselves not to know? precautions, the silence, to give ourselves over. What happens when we do that? To give ourselves over because we want to know. We want to see for ourselves. Roshi said something about this yesterday, about this trust. We don't know how it's going to happen. We don't know how it works. But it is from giving ourselves over, trusting this form of practice. What happens when we let go more than we've let go before? Awareness open, our eye of awareness open, our wisdom eye open. And I think we practice, it is practice to relax because we should practice in accord with the Dharma. There is no hardness in the Dharma. There is no opposition in the Dharma. No conflict. So to practice no conflict, to practice no opposition, relax when we're tight. Be gentle, be strong. It was a real turning for me when I started to practice. See, I needed to be gentle, mostly here with myself. And again, this reminder, looking for a remedy by rejecting something or pursuing any kind of accomplishment does not get beyond the cause and effect of cyclic existence. It is not by rejecting. It is not by pursuing. I'm going to let Shirtau sing one more time. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and take a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, it's covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms in their nature. A great vehicle, Bodhisattva, trusts without doubt. Most people can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window beneath the green pines, jade palaces and vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats, trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within. Then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk, innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations, are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.